Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the Video Store, the place that we can go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to chat to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop.
Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV?
Good morning.
Morning, Russell.
Howdy.
Hey, we got a call here.
I'm back.
Hey, how's it, everyone? Welcome to the Video Store. Thank you for wandering in to this lovely video store. We've got lots of movies and games and stuff all over our shelves. And we've got ourselves a great episode today.
Yeah.
We've got ourselves a Graham.
Morning.
A Graham G-Force Hackney. Who is an editor and very much the producer, the award-winning producer of this show.
Officially.
Hey, you won the award for best production quality at the South African Podcast Awards. And then we've got ourselves a Cole Matthews.
Hi.
Who has been away for a very long time.
Yeah.
How long was your trip?
Misa back.
Are you speaking in Jar Jar Binks?
My trip was fucking fantastic.
You were away for a
4 weeks.
4 weeks, a good month.
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's good to have you back, and we want to talk all about it, because if your trips are anything like mine, you like watch movies in foreign countries, and you buy cool like movie related stuff, and you kind of see a city through its cinemas, which is a very unique way of seeing the world.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we'll get into it, but it was like UK, Scotland.
UK and Scotland.
UK and Scotland. Lovely. Okay.
I mean, England and Scotland, UK.
Yeah.
We make that mistake as well.
I once had to sort of Google the difference, and I think I quite proudly understand the difference between England, Great Britain, UK.
It's all a bit convoluted.
Yeah.
It is a bit stupid.
And then one day you learn there's two islands.
Yes.
And you're like, how does that work?
North
and South Island.
Yeah.
Like Korea.
Yeah, there was a big ass war about it, Cole.
Yeah.
There were a lot of cranberry songs about it.
Yes.
Yeah. And there's a very cool movie coming up called Kneecap, which I don't know.
Oh, yes.
This is a nice chance to just talk about it again. A really cool movie about a hip hop group that sing in Irish Gaelic.
Oh, fuck.
And they've made
it
like cool again, and they act in their own biopic.
Yes.
It's very cool. It's called Kneecap.
And also shout out to Derry Girls.
Oh, I've never watched that. That's on Netflix, hey?
It's a scream, dude.
Is it great?
Yeah, it's stupid.
Oh, that's lovely. Another thing that's really cool and exciting is that the movie Heretic is coming out soon at the end of the month. This is the A24 horror that stars good old Hugh Grant.
Yes.
There is going to be a special screening.
Nice.
That is going to take place in Joburg on the 27th at 8 o'clock. At Rosebank.
Cool.
And we are going to have some tickets
that
we are going to give away to you guys, the customers that are busy browsing the shelves, listening to us chat.
Fine.
All that information is going to be announced on our Instagram.
Okay, sick.
So look out for that. And basically, we are going to want you to tell us why you deserve those tickets.
Yes.
And then it's going to be nice to meet you and hang out and all have a fat, good old time.
Cool.
Watching a horror. Remember the last time we did this, Cole?
Which?
It was for Talk to Me, and I spent most of the movie hiding in your armpit.
No. That was hectic.
Yeah, so I think this is going to be a repeat, and I don't quite know whether you want me to sit next to you. Please, can you?
I will, dude. I'll be there for you.
And please, can you wear your hoodie? So before we get into some things, let's just talk about what we're going to discuss today.
Cool.
I think the big one is Gladiator 2.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I was lucky enough to see it many weeks ago.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I must introduce myself.
Oh, yes.
Oh, Cole, we're not working at the video store. You
are a copywriter.
You're a copywriter. Is that what you've decided now?
Yeah, it's
okay.
It's
you gave yourself a cooler title the other day.
Oh, did I?
You were like a creative copywriter. You're just a copywriter.
Yeah, I'm more creative than other copywriters. No, you can call me like a digital.
Digital copywriter.
Yeah.
And then my name is Russell, for those who don't know, and I own The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. And this is our Clerks Chat, where For the next 40 minutes to an hour, let's see how it goes. We are uninterrupted by customers here at our video store. This is just us behind the counter talking about the movies that we're watching.
Yeah.
But yeah, the big one is Gladiator 2, which came out this past weekend.
Yeah.
I was invited to an exhibitor screening, so that's even before the press or the media, just me as a cinema owner. Mm. And I liked it.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. I was maybe a little bit critical at the time, but I also couldn't give too much away because it was quite far out from the release. But now we can get into it because you guys watched it over the weekend.
Yeah.
So we'll get into that. There's perhaps some other TV shows that I want to talk about. Any other big sort of main attractions?
I'm a month late on The Legend of Vox Machina season 3.
All right.
But I'd love to chat about that.
Cool.
Okay, cool. All right. So we'll get into that. But before further ado, let's do our Hey Did You Guys See?
Yeah.
It's been a weird French week at the Bioscope.
Okay.
We had our sold out Joburg French Cine Club on Thursday. And then there was a French improv troupe that came through and did a night of improv comedy, all in French, on Friday.
Amazing.
Sold out.
Fascinating.
That's so niche.
It's very niche.
Yeah.
But they're very popular in the French community.
Okay.
All right. Should we do Hey Did You Guys See?
Let's
then we're going to talk
it.
A little bit later about your trip.
Sure.
Okay, cool. All right.
Best for last.
Do you want to kick things off, G-Force?
Sure. Hey Did You Guys See? I don't know if anybody else even cares about this stuff, but... I'm interested in this stuff. Bob Iger is leaving Disney again.
Whoa.
As CEO. Or he's stepping down as CEO of
Disney. What does again mean?
Okay, so Bob Iger was the CEO of Disney. He stepped down, was replaced by Bob Chapek, who absolutely fucked it, and everyone hated him. So Bob Iger came back
to fix
everything.
How did he fuck it?
It's kind of like the Democrats and the Republicans in America, right?
Kind of, yeah. Well, he was doing stuff like just... Disney Plus was failing underneath him. He was using like either Disney Plus money to fund the parks or park money to fund Disney Plus. And it was just like just doing everything wrong that you can as a CEO of like a massive corporation.
Sure. Okay. Just sort and of no one like in the wrong direction.
Yeah. And obviously like
okay.
when that sort of thing happens, it's the shareholders who kind of step in and say, you need to get out.
I was about to say shareholders weren't happy.
Yeah, and then get back. Do you know who's a major, major shareholder in Disney?
No.
Is George Lucas.
Of course.
He has like massive stake in Disney.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it was part of the Star Wars deal.
Part of that deal, yeah.
He didn't just get like $3 billion. He got like a big share in Disney.
Good for him.
He's also, I don't know if he still is, but he was like he was second to the CEO of Hasbro in terms of shares.
Yes.
So he had like a massive stake in Hasbro at one point.
That is wild.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Man spends his money well.
He's got a museum that's opened up.
Oh.
Yeah, there's a big sci-fi museum. I've mentioned this before. Yes. I have a sort of a weird algorithm on YouTube that mostly centers around construction videos. There's a channel called the B1M, which is like the best channel and sort of in construction.
Yes.
I don't know why I fucking love this as much as I do, but it's all about like superstructures and mega builds and like big infrastructure projects.
Yes.
I don't know why. This wasn't a B1M video, but I get a lot of that stuff.
Mm.
But he's tried to have this. Well, he's built up a collection, George Lucas, of sci-fi artifacts and things. And then they've tried for many years to put this museum in certain places. It was originally going to be in Chicago. It was then going to be somewhere else, and then it didn't work out, and now it's in LA.
Okay.
So, very space age looking cool thing.
Cool.
Hi, I don't know if this is the same thing, but I found the Lucas Museum of Narrative Art.
I think that's it. It's super space age. It looks like
looks gorgeous.
It looks almost more Star Trek.
Oh. Mm.
It's that sort of very slick,
very clean
sci-fi, rounded circles.
Okay. Shall I read the quick blurb of it?
Yeah, sure.
Wow. So with a growing collection that encompasses artworks from across cultures, places, times, and mediums, including paintings, sculptures, murals, photography, comic art, book, and magazine illustrations, and the arts of filmmaking, the Lucas Museum will explore narrative art's potential to inspire community and move people to think about the impact of our images on the world.
Right.
Mm, lovely.
Okay. He's very romantic with his... Yes. Like the way he talks about story and like myths. It's really cool. It's like been a constant theme throughout his career. Yeah.
hey, did you guys see Warner Brothers are selling 10 functional Batmobiles?
Oh, my Lord.
For $3 million each.
Yeah. Like, oh, wow. From across the various Batman.
No, no. They're all the Christian Bale ones.
Oh.
Tumblers.
The tumblers, yeah.
That's the most impractical one.
Yeah. But they, you know, they do exist as real cars. Yeah. I was lucky enough to see them many years ago. I did a Warner Brothers studio tour in LA.
Mm.
And there's a room, and they're like, we're gonna go into the room.
Yeah.
And the guy was like, and they love it. They play it up. They're like, do you know what's behind this door? I was like, I know what's behind the door. He's like, don't tell everybody. And I was like, okay. And it's all the Batmobiles.
Cool.
All of them.
All of them.
Fuck, dude.
The, like, by far the best looking one in real life is the Tim Burton Michael Keaton one.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Because it's that like super. Almost like Art Deco looking.
Yes.
That's fucking impractical. Yeah. You want to speak about an impractical car? That makes no sense. It looks like a little weird little submarine that's got like little fans on it. But yeah, they're doing it, which is interesting.
I have a really cool segue from that.
Yeah.
But not because a week after I arrived in Milton Keynes to visit my boss, he told me that at the shopping center they had a Batman exhibition in the middle of the shopping center where they had the Tumblr. They like brought it to Milton Keynes for some reason, to the shopping centre for an exhibition. And then in London, there was a travelling Batman exhibition. Which was like all the shit.
And
I was like, fuck. There's too much to do. But we'll get onto that.
Yeah.
So, hey, did you guys see that there is a new Beatles documentary coming out?
Yes, Disney.
Yes. What's it called again?
The Beatles 64.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all about the year of 1964.
So when they came to America. Yes. When Beatlemania struck the US.
Yeah. I find it amazing that in history, you know, the Ed Sullivan show was probably daily.
Yeah.
But everyone just speaks about like that one night.
That one night, yeah.
It's so funny how like history has just piddled it down to like that one band that performed, that one show.
Yeah.
But there must have been countless other bands that performed on Ed Sullivan. But they didn't break.
Shit.
You know?
Did you ever watch Rain?
Rain?
The traveling Beatles tribute band.
Oh. No.
They performed at Monty once.
No.
So they started off with the Ed Sullivan set at the Monte Cassino stage. And they did the Ed Sullivan show set list.
Okay.
And it was fucking uncanny. It was a weird experience.
Yeah. Why was it called Rain?
I don't know. The Beatles person can tell us. Those people are weird.
But the one of the best things I read about the Beatles was the book Help. Funny enough, Gad, who works at the video store, he lent it to me. I don't think I've ever given it back.
Oh, no. You're one of those guys.
I'm one of those guys. I even invented an idea, which was the Get Your Shit Back app. where the moment you give something that like you hold dear to yourself,
like
you can like log it.
Yes.
And then when it's time to get your shit back, you like press the button and it just blasts the person with like, Russell wants his shit back. No, I think I gave it back to him. I must have given it back to him. But it was a great book because it was not the fluffy propaganda about the Beatles.
Okay.
There was so much about that.
Right.
And history also, it's a little bit like Mandela. Like there's a couple of little dodgy moments in history that like everyone's like, ah, let's not forget that he like cheated on his wife.
Yeah. You know?
That's both John Lennon and Mandela.
Yes.
But yeah, no, just to speak of John Lennon, I mean there was like a whole bunch of out of court cases, assault charges. There was a lot.
Yeah. No, these guys are messy, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's very interesting. Okay,
there's also a really good, just to say, on YouTube, there's a YouTube essayist, like video essayist, Lindsay Ellis, who did a really good video on Yoko Ono.
Wow. Yeah, history
about
is
that whole,
history's coming back and being a bit more favorable to her, which is nice.
Yes.
Hey, did you guys see that Conan O'Brien is going to host the Oscars?
Yes. It's a good choice. Yeah,
the 97th Academy Awards, which will take place on the 2nd of March. And I think our episodes building up to it will start talking about, you know, I think we've agreed, and perhaps I can speak on behalf of you guys, that, well,
I didn't vote for this.
No, we'll just, you haven't heard my point yet.
This dictatorship.
That we love talking about the Oscars.
Yeah.
And we love using it as a chance to talk about great movies. I think I would like the video store's stance to be that we're all winners. There shouldn't be one winner.
Yeah.
But just to speak about all the nominees is great because it just gives you a chance to get into all the movies. I don't think it matters who wins.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And I think it's unfair to pick a winner. I think there should just be like four finalists.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
And it literally, a lot of the time, doesn't matter who wins. How many people win Oscars and then just go nowhere after that?
Sure, yeah, sure. And true. I just think it's hard to just say, well, why, you know, how is one piece of art better than the other when they're vastly different? It's one thing if you're all swimming.
Yes.
It's like, okay, no, let's pick who the fucking better swimmer
and
is.
It's kind of like we're less angry about who won Best Picture more than the ones that were snubbed and didn't get nominated in the first place, like The Dark Knight not getting nominated for Best Picture in 2007, whenever it was.
No, sure.
You know, so that holds. That makes sense.
But yeah, it's a chance to talk about good movies, you know?
Yeah.
And it's exciting to think like Conclave now, which is screening at the Bioscope. Like that could crop up.
Yeah,
absolutely.
A little while ago, we screened The Bike Riders, which, you know, was a bit misunderstood, but it was a great fucking movie. Yeah. I think it's going to come back.
Okay.
I think it's going to pick up a couple.
Okay.
Jodie Picoult. How do you pronounce her name?
Yeah, I'm sure that's right.
Jodie Comer.
Oh, Jodie Picoult's the author of the Brie Larson movie book.
Nah. That's right. I see it on the shelf here. My brain is mush. But Jodie Comer, I think
she's great.
Should get a nomination for her role. Cool. G-Force?
How did you guys see the trailer for The Penguin Lessons?
What?
I saw it come up. I didn't watch it.
My note here is, looks very Russell. So this is Peter Cantoneo, I think his name is. So the guy who did The Full Monty.
Okay.
You spoke about something of his else fairly recently, something else that he did a few months ago. Okay. I can't remember what it was. But this is Steve Coogan, and it's based on a true story about an English teacher teaching in, I think, Argentina in the 1970s, like as things were like, there was a bit of a
getting
political coup happening of sorts. But he rescues, this is a true story, he rescues a penguin on a beach from an oil spill, and this penguin like attaches itself to him.
Like an imprint.
Yes, like an imprint on him. So it's following him around all over the place, and he has to like take care of this penguin while trying to be an English teacher in Argentina or Venezuela. It's Argentina or Venezuela.
Yeah.
But it looks very sweet and very gooey. And very gooey. Russell.
Cole, a little introduction. We are now using the word gooey.
Okay.
Just to give you a little background, it was my only way to describe whether or not a film is kind of moving me.
Yes, makes you feel gooey.
It makes your sort of insides go mushy.
Yes.
Mm.
Hey, you know that feeling.
Very on brand for you.
Yeah.
We should do our favorite gooey movies episode.
Yeah, yeah. I got the gooeys on the plane watching the movie Sing Sing, Cole.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh my God,
it looks
good.
So good.
Really,
it's so good. Yeah, we spoke about it a bit last week, but it's a film that didn't really come to South Africa, but it's all set in the prison, Sing Sing, where a bunch of prisoners do these plays. So it's all about the beauty of creating art and the mental state of being incarcerated, and fuck, it's good.
Shit. Looks wonderful.
And Coleman Domingo is my pick currently. He's my, if we have a fantasy league, fantasy Oscar league. He's my pick for best actor. I don't have any more. You guys got more?
I got a couple. We can do one or two. Okay, let's do a brief one. Last week, how did you guys see last week? I mentioned they're making two new Predator movies.
Yes.
Dan Trachtenberg is directing both of them.
Okay.
And they've given tiny little details on the one Predator Badlands, which is the one we know a little bit more about. The Predator is going to be the main character.
Oh,
so the movie's going to be from like the Predator's perspective.
Okay,
interesting.
Which is cool.
That's going to be like what silent movie vibes, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Foley artist has got lots of work.
I think that's going to be cool. And then,
that's interesting.
Yeah, I think that's going to be cool. That's kind of all we know about this movie at this point in time, which is interesting as well. But okay, this isn't really movie related. I just think it's very funny.
Yeah.
Hey, did you guys see that The Onion bought InfoWars?
Okay, what's
InfoWars?
So InfoWars is Alex Jones's like platform.
Oh, that's what I thought.
So Alex Jones is this right wing
lunatic. Yeah,
with his whole network is called InfoWars.
Yes,
and didn't
he like get almost arrested or charged?
Well, he has been. Yeah, he was charged. They
like
took him to court.
Charges.
It was the parents. Yeah, the parents of the Sandy Hook kids who he said were crisis actors. and he was ordered to pay them like $1 billion.
Yeah.
And part of that is seizing all of his assets. And one of those was InfoWars, which is a big like right-wing propaganda thing.
Yeah.
And now the satirical website, the satirical news website, the Onion, has bought InfoWars.
Do you think they've bought it to sort of squash it?
No, they're going to like turn it into like... like an information website now. So it's going to do the exact opposite of what InfoWars was doing of spreading like right-wing propaganda.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think that is so
genius.
Good.
Yeah.
Of like all the places to get it. The Onion. So funny.
Interesting.
I love
it. It's like if they said Joe Rogan bought, you know, that would have made a little bit more sense.
Joe Rogan bought CNN. Yeah. You know, that's like the equivalent.
Love it. Should we get into some movies?
Let's do it.
Okay. Guys, tell me about your Gladiator 2 experience.
Yeah.
Did you dress up like Romans and
sure.
You guys missed the chance to go. You guys missed the chance to go to the premiere. It happened while I was away, while I was on honeymoon.
Yeah.
You guys could have met Drickus. I'm just fucking saying.
Really?
Yeah. No, they did it at Emperor's Palace, which
that's
makes
why I
sense.
Didn't go because I didn't want to drive all the way to Emperor's Palace.
Yeah, and I mean, I wouldn't have wanted to go to Emperor's any other time except for some Roman reenactment. I mean, but Monte Cassino makes just as much sense.
It kind of does. It's close. There's enough
but
of it. But
they obviously couldn't book Monty.
Yeah.
So they did it at Emperor's, which is horrible. Can I tell you the one and only time I ever went to Emperor's?
Yeah.
In the lift, some other dude was like, "We're going to have a Bicky Double." Like, to me, and I was like, what?
Karate juice.
Excuse me?
Brandy and Coke.
Yeah, he's like, "We're going for a Bicky Double." I'm like, no, fuck. And what I ended up doing, it was with my ex to meet her dad and meet her dad's new girlfriend.
Nice.
And we went to the Hooters, and she told me about how much she loves drag racing. And I was like, this is a moment. This is a moment. This can only happen here.
You stepped into a portal, dude.
Yeah, either here or four ways. It's amazing how similar those two are.
Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah, I had to. We did the Billy Joel songbook with Jonathan Rocksmith, and we did like five shows. I think it was just a Friday night and two Saturday, one Sunday.
Okay.
So 3 days. Oh, no, it would have been like from the Wednesday. 5 days straight out to drive to Emperor's Palace and back.
Yeah.
Fucking worst 5 days of my life. It was terrible.
Yeah. All right. But tell me about your thoughts and feelings.
Fan of Denzel.
Oh, he was great, dude.
Yeah.
He was cool. And I think
he showed up.
Yeah. I think people are touting him for something, for some award love.
Mm. I think there's...
He was just very much Denzel Washington to me, so I don't think it was a stretch.
Yes. I think it's interesting to come into a space that is iconic, like Gladiator.
Yes.
You know, we have an iconic role from Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah.
The, like, one of two roles that everyone recognizes Richard Harris from.
Yeah.
You know, Russell Crowe's ultimate role.
Mm. Yeah,
and
sure.
Then you have to step into that realm and kind of differentiate it enough.
Yes.
I think Denzel did that. I think the twink emperors did that. You know? And fun as hell, there was one or two moments where he kind of overindulged.
Mm.
He was like, "That is politics."
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I'm not buying this. But you're doing like acting things.
But overall as a movie?
I think that it is a bloody good time out.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that's the way I've said it to people. Fun. It's a good solid big blockbuster movie.
Yeah.
I came out of it at the time. I don't know whether you were on working the shift when I had seen it.
No.
But it was quite hard for me because I was like, it's good. It's fucking big, epic.
Yeah.
Fucking Romans, rhinos, and sharks.
Yeah.
Which we must talk about, by the way. We must talk about these bloody
sharks.
But it left me a little like, meh.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
And I think this is an interesting thing because I rewatched Gladiator with Michael recently.
Mm.
Okay, what was that like?
And I was like, oh, Gladiator's time has come and gone for me.
Oh, you think so?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I watched it and I was like, oh, this is dated. This is old. I'm not excited about this anymore.
Right.
Well, didn't have any emotional impact on me. I've listened to the soundtrack a bajillion times.
Okay.
Going, and I was just like, it just felt old and gone.
Yeah, well, recreating the Colosseum with... sort of a, it was 20 years ago, right?
Yeah. Mm.
The first one. So we finally had the sort of CGI
to
sort of properly do this on the grandest, biggest scale, which they did.
Mm.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
When you see it the second time, you're like, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. I remember this.
See, I watched it last night. I watched the original Gladiator last night for comparison.
I loved it.
Really?
I loved going back to it.
It is cool. And perhaps here's my one argument is that there was such a solid good and bad in the first one.
All right.
Hey? And there was a real solid, like, this is the bad guy. Yeah. Let's take two and a half hours yes. to mount your hate right. for the one guy.
Yes.
Yeah, this is true.
Where in Gladiator 2, it was a bit like, you got to shift yourself.
Mm.
You know, and then you realize, like, oh, the bad guy's actually like a good guy.
Yeah,
and
there's
then,
a lot then of chess pieces
then
on the board.
Then
yeah.
they're those bad guys, but then they die. But then, oh, shit, here's the other bad guy.
Yes.
Where it's, but I mean, I wouldn't have wanted it to be the same because then it would have really been the same movie. Mm, because
absolutely.
Over on the other side, the character arcs were exactly the same.
Yeah.
You had a dude who was forced to be a gladiator, and he's super strong, and he's yes. the best, and... works his way up.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it started to feel a lot like Gladiator. We were saying this.
Yes.
That how do you like take a revenge story mm. about Gladiator and make a difference from Spartacus to Gladiator to Gladiator 2?
Yeah.
And we said that, and this might be a bit of a spoiler, try not to spoil it for you guys.
Yeah.
But Denzel Washington's character is very much taking that theme of revenge and unpacking it in a different direction. There's like the justice of what happened to Paul Mescal, and I have opinions about his character arc,
yeah.
but Denzel Washington's character kind of takes it towards ambition. It's like revenge for the sake of colored. You said to me yesterday, colored with ambition,
yeah.
which was really nice.
Interesting.
Mm.
I mean, to me, so I was lucky enough to go to Rome earlier this year. Well, not earlier, like a month or two ago.
Yeah.
I went away to Italy with my family. And it was really cool to see the Roman Forum and the Colosseum mm. and stand in it and all this cool stuff. I was kind of fascinated at how it crumbled, like
yes.
how it fell.
Nice.
You know, and
like
it was
the Colosseum itself, or like
well, just Rome.
Rome
in general. Yeah. Like how did you fuck that up?
Yes.
You know, how did that fall apart? And parts of Gladiator 2 were hinting at the fact that this thing is going to
yes.
fall.
I wanted to talk about this actually.
And I
yeah.
thought that was perhaps a more interesting mm. angle to go to, which is like how you handle this as Rome falls.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
I think especially watching it in comparison to the other one, like the way they portray Rome. And the way they portray the Colosseum in the first one,
mm.
it's like grandeur and it's mm. like spectacular. And
yes.
they're like in awe of like the Colosseum itself because of how big it is and all that stuff. In this one, when the gladiators first arrive in Rome and they see the Colosseum, it's like everything's filthy. Like all the buildings are like falling apart. They're being held up by scaffolding.
Mm.
Like there's beggars in the streets. They comment on how bad it smells.
Yeah, that's you know, interesting.
It's
okay,
like they're,
so
they're like flipped it and they're like, even if you look at like the costume design, if you compare the way Commodus dresses as an emperor as opposed to the way the twink emperors in this one dress, like all the luster's gone. They're like mm. so much more stripped
yeah.
down and so much more simple.
Yes.
You know?
Because it was interesting to hear that for many years, after the Roman, you know, empire had fallen, like vagrants were living in the Colosseum.
Yeah.
They sort of used it as like a big fucking dorm.
Yes.
At one point. So yeah, it was interesting how it sort of fell.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, also like I think there's this thing of like, oh, the Roman Empire fell in like a week. But
no,
it was
probably about 100 years.
It took like 200 years yeah. that Rome was in decline.
Yeah.
So it's like
interesting.
They still botched it.
Yeah, well, okay. They still could afford fucking sharks in the arena.
Yes.
Okay, so that to me felt a bit silly. But great. Okay, so you can see it in the trailer, so we're not giving
yeah.
much away. But one of the battles in Gladiator 2 mm-hmm. involve filling the arena
yeah.
with water and them sort of fighting on boats.
Yes.
But in the water are fucking sharks.
Yes.
Now you say that they certainly filled it in the past.
They would flood it, yes. They would fill it with water, and they'd have like crocodiles and hippos and stuff.
Where'd they get the fucking hippos?
They were well. I mean, think about how far the Roman Empire went all the way to like Egypt.
Yeah. Okay.
So they
brought the hippos.
Yeah.
In from
they
there.
Would stuff them on a boat and then bring them back.
Oh God! Because at that point I was like, this is a bit silly. I also realized I can't order sea bass without thinking of Austin Powers. Have we spoken about this?
What?
No.
Every time I hear like sea bass on the menu, yeah. I always think of ill-tempered mutated sea bass. Because remember, he wanted sharks with freaking
yes.
laser beams attached to their heads.
Yeah.
That was how he wanted to kill his you know, victims.
Yeah. I
Dr.
always think
Evil.
Of Jurassic Park.
What's that?
I always think of Jurassic Park when you say sea bass.
Oh,
Chilean
yeah?
sea bass. It's on the menu. It's what they eat when they're They have their little "let's shit all over Hammond" scene.
Okay, I don't remember that. Interesting how Seabass is linked to all these movies. But no, I remember hearing the other day. I've got folks in my life who have a big koi pond, and they were talking about how the koi are going to die if the little oxygenator doesn't work in the tank. And I was like, what? I thought fish just fucking live in water. Yeah. But the fish will die if there's no like
oxygen.
Oxygen pumping in the water.
When they're drawing water in through their mouth and releasing it through their gills, they're like pulling the oxygen from the water into their bodies.
But I guess in the wild, there's probably stuff in the water that's naturally making oxygen. Yes. There'll be like algae and shit that's making oxygen. So
that's coral reefs.
We've gotten so off topic. That is about gladiators.
No, but this is the thing, is that how did the fucking shark survive in the Colosseum if there's no oxygenator?
I don't think they care about whether or not the animals
swimming
survive.
Around getting like dizzier and dizzier until eventually they just float.
I did pull up a research on this.
It's here.
And absolutely there were no sharks in the Colosseum.
Yeah, I mean,
but they did throw horses and bulls into the water.
Right.
But apparently like that means it must not have been deep enough for them to have to swim.
Right.
So they would like walk around, but then they'd also fill it deep enough to put boats in so that they would have like these ship wars.
Insane.
It's wild. That sounds messy.
You think about the logistics of that.
Yeah. Did they ride rhinos, Cole? Can anybody ride a rhino?
I doubt they rode rhinos, but I'm sure they had them. That was actually a scene that was from the original Gladiator, but they cut it for budget.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's a good fact.
You can find like the storyboards and stuff for it. That was early on in the movie, there's another scene where they fight other animals. They fight baboons, and I was like, ooh, the CGI is a bit ropey. I'm a bit concerned.
It was touch and go.
Yes. But then the rhino, I was like, holy shit,
that was incredible.
That's like a photorealistic rhino.
It's a good looking rhino.
It was a handsome rhino.
Yeah. It's a gorgeous rhino, man.
Okay. Any other, big thoughts on it? I mean, my feeling was like, why did this need to get made?
Mm.
Like, it didn't feel like there was a dying need to tell someone's story that, was a chapter left unturned.
Yeah, because they didn't set up the need for Lucius's story at the end of the first one, right?
Yeah.
So we kind of just forgot about Lucius, but then now we're telling that story, and I'm not mad that we have it.
No, that was the feeling. That's why I was left a little. I couldn't quite articulate myself after watching it. I was like, it's a big ass cool like movie.
Mm.
I think that's the thing, coming from Gladiator, like a film that's that massive and had such a cultural impact.
Mm.
Like it's quite legendary for all of us.
Yeah.
I think that you're never going to like get a bit of that magic again with a sequel because it was just that massive.
Mm.
But it's fine that we have one.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
You know, like no complaints.
I think the like central thing that people are going to be missing is it doesn't have a Russell Crowe. It doesn't have like a Russell Crowe, and it doesn't have that like central character that everything kind of hinges around.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the kind of thing that this is missing. Like we were saying, it feels like that character kind of exists in this movie, but as two characters. It's Paul Mescal and Pedro, and Pedro Pascal.
Yeah.
Those two characters kind of fulfill like
What was that one role, sort of mighty one?
Exactly.
Needed more Pedro Pascal.
Absolutely.
I think we always need more.
Yeah, exactly.
We need more of him every time.
And yeah.
My other issue with it was, and I can't discuss without giving away like spoilers.
Yes.
But the turn that Paul Mescal's character makes, where his motivation changes,
is
kind of just in service of the plot.
Yes.
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
We needed a scene with him and Pedro Pascal's character.
Absolutely.
Before things went down. Yes. Yeah. We needed like a scene between the two of them. Yeah.
And they fight in the trailer. They fight in the trailer, so we know that
prior to that fight.
Basically, in the fight, there's a character change that happens for Paul Mescal's motivation. He just sit there going, nope. I don't believe that for a second.
No.
And then the climax just falls flat because of it.
Yeah,
you know?
I agree.
I was left at the end of that movie when he did his big heroic battle talk to everyone.
Yeah.
I was a bit like, meh.
You know what it is? It's a real Force Awakens of a movie. Mm. In that it's a legacy sequel to a movie that came out like 20 years earlier, but they're playing it very safe.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They're like following a lot of the same beats.
Mm.
Picking up a lot of the same things. It's like they feel like they need to like remind people because they're already talking about Gladiator 3. Ridley Scott's like, we have the idea for Gladiator 3.
Yeah.
And it feels like they felt like they needed to like reintroduce people into this world in like a safe, approachable way.
The one is more manufactured when the other one was an organic thing.
Mm. So now we're coming in with our subversive sequel like The Last Jedi.
Let's hope. Oh, I'd love to see that. Hey, do you guys know about the other sequel to Gladiator that they almost, well, not almost made. It was never going to get made.
What?
Okay.
But so yeah, Nick Cave.
I heard about this.
Nick Cave, who's an Australian musician.
Yeah.
Russell Crowe went to him and was like, write me a Gladiator sequel. And Nick Cave was like, but you died. And Russell Crowe was like, that's your problem. Okay. So Nick Cave came up with a movie called, get this, Christ Killer.
Okay.
Where it was going to be about Maximus stuck in purgatory and he's resurrected by the Roman gods to kill Jesus to end Christianity before it like overtakes the like Roman religions.
It's a big swing.
Yeah. Which also doesn't, like people have pointed out, it doesn't make any sense because the first movie points out that it starts in 180 AD. So it's so like almost Jesus 200 years after Jesus is already
dead.
But
does he go to heaven to kill Jesus? Because Jesus went back to heaven.
No, he's got to time travel as well. He's got to go back in time.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, kill that was Jesus. His idea. And then it was going to end with Maximus. You're going to have like a montage of Maximus fighting in like the Crusades and World War II and all these things. And eventually it was going to end with him working in the Pentagon because he's just like stuck on Earth now. Forever, just like fighting wars.
One of the nicest stories I heard was when Russell Crowe was, I think after Gladiator, was traveling in Rome and was visiting the Vatican City with his family.
Okay,
and they went into the Sistine Chapel, which very famously is dark. Mm. I've been lucky enough to see it. Because they don't want to put the lights on because it could damage the artworks.
Yeah.
But the person put the lights on for Russell Crowe. And he was like, what? Like, fuck. Like, you don't have to do that. And he's like, anything for Maximus Aurelius.
Decimus Meridius.
Decimus Meridius.
Yeah. It would be great if he was like, anything for Russell Rock.
I'm talking about Nick Cave. Zam and I realized that we were both in Manchester at the same time.
Oh, shit. And good old like, Zammy, a friend of mine, is overseas.
Yeah. And we're like, dude, let's go for brunch. I'm going to London tomorrow. Because he was like also doing it. But then he was like, no, he's going to go watch Nick Cave the following night in Manchester. Oh, so that's cool. A weird segue.
Yes.
I was like, oh, that happened to me.
Tell us quickly about some of the movies you watched when you were away.
Oh, yeah. The best movie I watched was on the plane to the UK.
Cool.
Two things. One was I saw The TV Glow.
Mm. Yeah, I've been wanting to watch that.
Same. Dude.
Fuck, it's on my list.
I'm so worried I'm going to do that thing where you hype up a movie too much and everyone will be disappointed by it.
No, you can't hype it up enough. Parents like, spoken about it. A lot of people have said this is the sleeper hit of the year.
Yeah.
I had a spiritual experience watching this movie. I don't know if it was the like bathing in the experience of going to the UK again to watch Dream Theater and living my best life.
Yeah, the excitement of the
glasses of wine on the plane.
Yeah.
I don't know what the deal was.
No, but we've said this on the video store that the altitude can heighten your emotions.
Yes.
Absolutely. It was insane.
Okay, so the movie's called I Saw the TV Glow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah. I think it was like one of the most challenging, interesting science fiction, emotive. It's like the Matrix with like 10 times better characters.
Some fear I have, sorry, just before we get into it, is that I know that especially for the kind of movies I want to watch. So there's a bunch of like, you know, maybe sort of more adult themed, perhaps a bit violent films that are on the plane. I know they edit them.
Yes.
And I'm afraid of picking those kinds of movies on the plane because I don't actually know whether I'm watching the final cut.
Yeah.
Because they definitely cut things out because you can't have a little kid looking over and being like, what the fuck? but I Saw the TV Glow, is it a bit adult themed?
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah. So do you think you watched the proper cut?
I actually don't know.
I don't know.
That thought never entered my mind.
Sure. Yeah. But I mean, either way, it was an amazing movie, which just tells you that perhaps at the core of it was a really good movie.
Yeah.
What is the back of the box on that?
The back of the box is, let me see if I can remember, is that there's kind of this disaffected teenager in a town that discovers another like lonesome, what do you call like, outcast from society.
Right.
Yeah.
And they both link through this TV show that's about these two teen witches that like kind of solve mysteries together. That's the gist I got from it.
Okay.
And they're obsessed with this TV show. He's not allowed to watch it. She's in an abusive relationship. Then for some reason they kind of disconnect.
Right.
And they grow up. And then they realize that, I don't know if actually this is a spoiler, but it has to be part of the hook, is that basically, they are the characters in the TV show, and they were captured by the villain and made to live a normal life
right.
in the stream state.
Okay.
And that's where the Matrix time comes.
Yes.
That's all I'm going to say about it.
Okay.
Interesting. Speaking of dreams, one of the films I watched on the plane, but I wasn't able to finish, which fucking annoyed me.
I hate that, dude.
They should actually have someone said this on the internet the other day. There should be a category of movies on the plane that just say films that you can finish before we land.
Yes.
And it can update like by the minute.
Yes.
Taking out sort of your options. But I started watching Dream Scenario, the Nicolas Cage movie where everyone starts dreaming about him. Fascinating movie. I don't really? Have you guys seen it?
No.
Okay, because I need to see the end of it now.
Yeah, they didn't distribute it here because they said no one would buy tickets.
Yeah. No, it's odd. It's lacquer arty and weird, but it's a great play on what it means to go viral.
Okay.
What it means to be a person who just becomes like, you know, you're a normal person and then the whole world knows about you and what that does to you. So I think it's, yeah, I need to see the ending.
Cool. That's rad.
Okay, what other movies?
I went to the Odeon in Milton Keynes,
okay,
which was like crazy expensive spending in rands. and I watched The Substance.
Okay.
With Demi Moore.
So now Perrin wants to talk to you about The Substance.
Okay.
So we need to do perhaps next week.
Yeah.
We'll have a chat about it.
You guys can have a good chat about it. Mm. I started watching it.
Yeah.
I got to the, because I put in my eye patch and been watching it here at home because it never came to South Africa.
Mm.
And yes. It's not available in South Africa. I watched it in little bite-sized portions, and so far I've gotten to the point where the chicken bone comes out of the belly button.
Okay.
And so
you're getting into the meaty stuff.
I'm getting into the like the real fucked
the David
up stuff.
Cronenberg fucking body horror.
But I think we must save a little bit of that
for
you and Perrin to have a good chat.
Cool. Absolutely.
I do think it's interesting that the filmmaker, who's female,
yeah.
Has recently pulled out of a prominent film festival
because
of misogynistic comments that the festival director made.
Nice.
One or two other people have pulled out, and so there's a little bit of a cancelling happening.
Okay.
And this filmmaker of The Substance was like, my movie very much speaks against, you know, these kind of misogynistic males.
Yeah, he's like Dennis Quaid in the movie, basically.
Yeah, and so we're out.
Nice.
The one thing I saw which was very funny about The Substance was someone saying, despite this being a disgusting body horror, the worst part of this movie is watching Dennis Quaid eat prawns.
Oh my God.
And I've watched that scene and I'm like, this is disgusting.
This is sick. It's like a super wide lens, like in his mouth.
In his mouth, there's this guy like fucking eats these prawns. It's gross. It's like just sets up your appetite being like lost.
Basically,
throughout
this movie. The end of that movie, you'll be like, oh, men are trash. That's what happens at the end of the movie, basically. Yeah.
Okay, we'll save that chat, but that's cool.
Then when I was in Glasgow visiting my friend Ian
and
meeting his little 3-year-old girl for the first time, which was wonderful.
Adorbs.
She was so nice. I went to go watch Nosferatu, the 1922 Nosferatu, at the Grosvenor Theatre in Glasgow.
Okay.
Yeah, and you sent me pictures, which I was very appreciative of.
Mm, a very cool little old school theatre. It was also like a tiny... theater, maybe twice the capacity of the bioscope, I think.
Okay, cool.
Lower ceiling, like far more, I think, classic in its decor.
Right.
And with little lamps in between, like every two seats
kind of thing. Oh, cool. Like a little red velvety place.
It was such a cool experience to watch Nosferatu in a cinema packed full of people.
Because so this is the older Nosferatu.
The first vampire movie ever made.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's like Nosferatu, an adaptation of Dracula.
Right.
All the same characters. You can see the same story happening there, but it's so funny watching like Mina Harker. I don't know what their names are in the movie because they changed it.
Yeah.
And also Robert Eggers' Nosferatu film coming out now uses the character names from that Nosferatu, not from the Dracula book.
Oh.
But I can only remember the names from the Dracula film. And Mina Harker is like sitting there in the window looking like a beautiful woman, looking at the flowers like, ha, ha, ha. And then her husband, Jonathan Harker, walks into the room, like sees her in the window, picks flowers from the garden because he's like, oh, my wife is so beautiful. They're not saying anything like this. This is all in their faces because it's a silent movie. And he runs into the room. There's like 30 seconds of him just looking at his wife and being amazed at how beautiful she is. And everyone in the cinema is like hacking out laughing. And also, like when Dracula Nosferatu lands in England, he carries a coffin with him because he has to carry the soil.
Oh,
and you just have this wide shot of this dude, this vampire walking holding his coffin and everyone's packing out laughing.
Just because the scene's sort of...
It's like ridiculous.
It's going
aged
on for too long.
And this was like the height of horror in 1922.
Yes.
But nowadays you're watching, like, this is so silly. This is so dumb. But it's like, it's cool to have that experience. Mm. And I would highly recommend it. Like, if there's an opportunity to sit in a dark room with like 50 strangers and watch Nosferatu.
Well, maybe we can happen here at the Bioscope. I think we should do that because traditionally we always screen these kinds of movies ahead of reboots or sequels and things happening. So Nosferatu, the modern one, isn't coming to South Africa. I have tried with the distributors. I understand their trepidation or issues or problems, but it doesn't look like it's coming, which is which is a problem. It seems like this new Nosferatu is getting interesting reviews. It's people are saying it's not shit. They're just saying like it really goes there. That's what seems to be the review. It's got Johnny Depp's daughter in it.
Mm. No, Lily Rose Depp.
Yeah, and it seems like it seems like
she's getting award hype for that role as well.
Yeah,
So
maybe there's some, I don't know, maybe these films become more available in time.
Yeah.
And like maybe they'll be able to take the risk on it.
If it gets nominated, then they'll bring it, yeah. That's how the South African distributors work.
Maybe, hopefully. Let's see.
Yeah.
I'm busy reading, speaking of these like old-timey horror things, I'd love to take a moment to say that I'm reading Frankenstein.
Cool. Frankenstein's great.
Yeah.
Dude.
Have you guys read it?
Yeah. No.
Okay. You've read it, G-Force. So I'm working my way through a bunch of classic books.
Cool.
I'm really enjoying it. It feels like a very like late 30s, 40s exercise to read all the books that you like should have read.
I started that this year and failed.
Oh, but really?
I get you.
No, it's a good place to be because a lot of these books were the kind of books that could have been subscribed to you in high school.
Yes.
We didn't get them. And so it's cool to come at them as an adult where it's like, I want to read 1984. I finally got around to reading Metamorphosis.
Okay.
The Kafka short story. I remember a very cool person in varsity being like, "You got to read this." And I like didn't.
Right.
Now I've got the time to do it.
Yes.
Crazy.
And I'm really enjoying Frankenstein.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think it's solid.
It wasn't the story I thought it was going to be.
Mm.
We only really know the moment.
Yeah.
Where he sort of it's alive. That's what we kind of I think is in everyone's head, right?
Yeah. Mm.
Absolutely.
But it's that part when he creates the monster is small.
Yeah.
It's like, I made the monster and he ran away.
Mm.
And you're like, what the fuck? What's the rest of this fucking story about? And then it's about him being tormented by this character. So I don't know whether you know this, Cole, but it's like, so he's a scientist. He's a young man. He goes
off. The story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Creates this monster. But then this monster just fucking ducks.
Yeah.
And then the monster sort of like realizes the world's never going to want him or appreciate him. So then he tracks down Frankenstein and goes like, you got to make me a partner so that I can live with someone. But he doesn't want to do this abominable thing again.
Yes.
What's the fucking word?
Abominable.
Abominable. Yeah. And then this monster sort of slowly makes his life a living hell.
Yeah.
Like that's the point of the movie. I mean, of the story.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting to read it now. And I'm excited because Guillermo del Toro has finished wrapping the filming of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
See, this is like a good program at the Bioscope to do because you could do Frankenstein, the Bride of Frankenstein, and the Robert De Niro Frankenstein.
Oh, right.
There was a Robert De Niro
Frankenstein? Yeah, he played Frankenstein. Yeah. I think Winona Ryder played the Bride of Frankenstein, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, there's a movie, dude.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I did something kind of similar to that years ago. I went back and reread all like high school set works. Because in high school, when you've been forced to read them, you just hate it because you don't want to do
absolutely.
It.
So
what were some of those gems?
Tale of Two Cities is great.
Okay.
I've never read Tale of Two Cities. Tale of Two Cities and Lord of the Flies were the two that are.
So Lord of the Flies is next on my pile.
I love that
Lord of the Flies is phenomenal.
I remember that book kind of feeling like it's got a weird pacing thing that happens throughout. It's a short book, but it's kind of just this like lethargic building that's really slow. And then the final two pages happen and you're like, fuck.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can look forward to the final two pages.
It was so cool.
Thanks, Cole. I still haven't read the book.
No trust, dude.
It's fine.
It's a beautiful journey on the way there.
Yeah.
But Mary Shelley, who wrote Frankenstein, Perrin pointed this out. We didn't talk about it last week. She was 19?
Something like that. Yeah, she was very young.
which is wild.
Yeah,
when she wrote the book, and she, I think we've also mentioned this before. It was relatively unheard of to have a woman write a book
at the time,
let alone sort of invent a genre in a book.
Yeah, she, like, invented horror.
Yeah,
I remember talking to my friend Shana about this, who like reveals a lot about the world that I don't understand to me.
I love those people.
Yeah, dude. Like, great person to have dinner with and drinks.
Mm.
Her dad gave me their Italian coffee machine yesterday because they got a new one.
Nice.
So I've got like a proper coffee machine at home. It's dangerous. So he said, you have to use it like every day. Otherwise, it's going to fuck up the innards of the machine. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm going to make my little Italian espresso in the morning.
I look forward to you being a more pretentious person.
Yeah, dude, absolutely. I got these beans roasted in Guatemala,
in
Vietnam.
Sorry, guys, I'm going to be a little late. I'm busy percolating.
But she said to me, only a woman could have written a book about a monster being estranged from society and not fitting in.
Right.
I was like, fuck, cool.
Okay.
In that day and age.
Mm.
Like, wild. Eh? It's like an interesting like way to think about it.
Yes.
Sure. That does make you think.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other movies? Let's talk movies.
The last thing I'll talk about on the holiday is you told me to go to the Prince Charles Theatre.
Oh, cool.
In Leicester Square.
Yes.
Which is like kind of where West End is.
Yes.
Okay. So it's like, I don't really know West End. Yeah. I did, when I was a little kid, I watched Starlight Express on the West End.
Oh, right.
Which was a magical experience. But of course, you've got, remember when you were a kid and you thought your friend lived like super far away, and then when you were grown up, you're like, they were around the corner?
Yes.
Okay, so I have no idea where the West End is in London. But yeah. But I discovered the Prince Charles once the Bioscope was up and going, and I realized there's this cinema in London that is very similar in frequency to the Bioscope. Plays old stuff, does quote-alongs, sing-alongs. It's fun, it's geeky at the same time, but it's also very fun. So I made a point of going there, much like your trips, where it's like your trip involves watching movies.
Yes.
So I watched Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Cool.
Oh, it's a good film to watch there.
Which was delightful, with a video store customer, Darcy, who did that really cool episode with us on AI.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was real special. And then when you said you were going to London, I was like, Cole, you got to stop by the Prince Charles.
Yeah.
Which, very famously, when Prince Charles became King Charles, they've got this big marquee above their name, which they can put letters on. And their big sign said, no, we're not changing our name. What did you watch?
So I was there during Halloween, so all the Halloween programming was up.
Cool.
Yeah.
And there was a partnership with the Prince Charles Theatre for this famous, I can't remember the name now, beer brand that I saw all over the UK. And they also had an ad at the start, like this like 5-minute animated short film that would play at the start of every film.
Oh, cool.
Damn, I wish I remembered the name. Sorry, guys. Someone will know. But I watched Nightmare on Elm Street because I was like, this is a classic I've never watched.
Yeah.
Cool.
Maybe it'll be cool to watch close to Halloween. I took my friend Brendan Salsa with. And it was terrible.
I never watched Nightmare on Elm Street when I was a kid.
Yeah, same.
I then watched it as an adult probably about 20 years ago,
because
I've been an adult for more than 20 years.
Hectic.
At the start of my adultness, I remember being in New York. I was like sort of 20, 21, 22, and I watched it at a friend's apartment, and I was like, this is fucking great.
Okay.
So for you, it wasn't cool.
I didn't get
this
it.
This is Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
This is an early Johnny Depp where you see his tummy because he wears that sort of like weird. He wears that weird like sort of football top.
Yeah.
And he gets sucked into his bed. I don't remember it sort of slapping hard, but I remember it being like, okay, this is still cool.
I think maybe the problem is I've watched Freddy versus Jason.
Oh yes.
Or Jason X. Like, I've watched these movies before I've watched this, and I think I've watched quite a few of the clips on movieclips.com on YouTube of like some of the deaths and in the remake.
Yes.
So that like the impact of it was kind of lost. I mean, I was trying to appreciate it for the fact that it was low budget horror.
Yeah.
Wes Craven's like pioneering low budget work.
Yeah.
And
I just remember someone making it better for me by saying, okay, so when these folks go to sleep, this is where this guy is.
Yeah.
And he's sort of killing them in their dreams.
Mm.
And he's sucking them into the bed. Mm. And I remember someone pointing out that what made that movie so smart is that the bed was always the safe space. You know, the monsters were under the bed, or the monsters were in the cupboards when you were a kid. The bed was always the place you could hide. And what made this movie scary in the 80s when it came out, it was 80s.
Yeah, it was like early 80s.
was that you were sucked into this bed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what should have been safe was not.
Yeah.
But this is the start of like the final girl. This is the start of like using the colors. So she was always in blue, and blue is sort of represents the virginity and her being this kind of pure person.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of like smart horror signifiers and things that.
Yeah,
that,
I mean, like
that,
maybe
that
the problem is I've
started.
Watched Scream before I watched Nightmare on Elm Street. So yeah, Scream's perhaps. Parodying it, you know, yeah. So it's like tainted the yeah. experience of it. But like. Yeah, cool movie for its time, I suppose.
It's one of those ones where if you we've spoken about this, the movies you watched when you were too young to see them.
Yeah.
Yes. Like if you watched that when you were too young to see it, especially at the time,
yeah.
It would have messed you up. But I think it's more, like its legacy is more interesting than the movie itself.
Exactly.
Like it's a very influential film.
Absolutely. 100%.
There's a YouTube channel called The Bad Movie Bible. And he goes and looks at movies, and then he'll take like Nightmare on Elm Street, and then go and find all of like the movies that like it influenced and ripped it off, and were knockoffs of that. And he did one on Nightmare on Elm Street. And it's interesting to just to see like how many movies like straight after it came out.
Yeah,
there were just like dozens of movies that were like imitating it because of how successful it was.
Yeah. Any other movies?
Not from my side.
I suppose I can talk about. I watched Brothers on Amazon Prime and Women of the Hour on Netflix.
Okay, cool.
I don't know if you guys have watched either of those or spoken about them.
Watched Women of the Hour. We actually screened it at the Bioscope for a brief week.
Okay.
Just before it came out on Netflix. I then watched it on Netflix. I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
It was a little bit jumbled and a little bit weird.
Yes, absolutely.
A little all over the show. So I don't think it quite needs too much time. But what was Brothers like?
Disappointing. Because
okay.
it has a stacked cast.
Yes.
Yeah,
Marissa Tomei, Glenn Close, Peter Dinklage, Josh Brolin, Brendan Fraser.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And you're like, oh fuck, this is going to be a cool little like kiss kiss bang bang
yes.
comedy of errors.
Nice guys kind of.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And this you can see the actors are like kind of doing a great job.
Yes.
But the script is just never elevating the comedy to the point where it's actually funny.
Okay.
You're kind of just on the cusp of a laugh
right.
throughout the entire film.
I know that feeling. Yeah.
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 Okay, but that's now on Amazon.
Yeah.
Okay. Over on to TV shows.
Sure.
I think it's just worth a little mention. This is all a little light and somewhat more fluffier content, but Tracker season 2 has started.
This
is on Disney Plus.
Yes.
This is what we call a fall asleep show here at the video store, which is those shows that don't necessarily, you know, blow open your mind or, you know, keep you up at night. It's a nice little whodunity type episodic show.
Okay.
But it's really slick. It's really good.
Cool.
It's a dude who is a bounty hunter.
Right.
You'll recognize this handsome chap from This Is Us and a bunch of other stuff.
Okay.
Well, he's got a jawline, eh?
He's got a fucking jawline. No, he's a handsome dude, and you know, everyone's quippy and you know, he's got his sidekicks and his people who help him. But he it's a good heartfelt TV show where he rescues and finds people and gets the reward. Sprint.
Okay.
What's that?
Sprint is a Netflix sports docuseries, and it's about the sprinters. It's about the fastest people in the world, both female and male, focusing specifically on the 100 meters and the 200 meters.
Okay.
And we're now that far away from Paris that all that content can be now edited. And it was smart. They for both Simone Biles, who is the famous gymnast, and Sprint, they released these kind of introductory episodes before the Paris Olympics. So it was obviously all part of a much bigger plan to sort of set up these characters so that you could enjoy the Olympics and go in knowing these characters. Also because Netflix is clearly just cashing in on every single sport after Drive to Survive was so successful.
Yeah.
But what's nice is that you, now that there's enough time, we're now seeing the edited second season, so to speak, of both these shows. So I mentioned Simone Biles rising and her Olympic journey, but now this is these guys and the story of what happened at the Paris Games. Because there was some cool controversy and there were some cool, interesting things that happened.
Okay.
The most notable of which was the Botswanan dude winning the 200.
Oh, okay.
Taboko, that's his surname. And it was great to like actually get him featured because this is really going to help his career. And then Noah Lyles, who's the big fucking flashy sprinter that everyone kind of knows, the guy who sort of jumps out and, you know, we saw him sort of jump out and make a big splash. You know, when everyone else just sort of walks out and puts up their hand.
Yes.
Says, yeah, that's me. And then they go to the starting blocks. He does this whole like jump around thing. And he was meant to win the 200, but right. he didn't. He ended up coming third.
Right.
And he collapsed at the end. No. And then it was revealed he's like, I have COVID.
Oh,
and everyone
geez.
Thought like, well, then why the fuck were you competing?
Yes.
And also, that also just sounds like an excuse.
Right.
But then this show actually shows like he knew he still wanted to compete. He still felt fine, but he still had it.
Yes.
He was keeping his mask on. Jeez. It's cool. It's interesting. It's worth watching.
Suck, dude. Yeah.
But it's a really interesting show because so much of that performance athlete competitiveness hinges on mental health. Mm. And both those shows, Simone Biles Rising and Sprint, focus on that. They're like, everyone can do it. Everyone could win. But it's about their head.
Mm.
And it's about where they were and how they got off that made them these champions.
Yeah.
And it's nice. There's a little kind of gooey moments. It's cool.
Cool.
It's a good watch. I think it's worth watching Sprint so that you can also see these characters, understand these people.
Yeah.
It's done well.
Nice.
That's cool. On the airplane to the UK, after watching us all TV Glow,
mm-hmm.
stayed up. Like it was a night flight, so I was just like, I'm not sleeping. I'm watching in this uncomfortable seat. I'm watching this series called The Offer, which is on Paramount Plus.
Okay.
Which is about the making of The Godfather.
Yes. It's available in South Africa.
It's nuts. Oh.
I watched it. It was on DSTV.
Oh, okay.
So it's not on Showmax.
Not on Showmax, as far as I know. It might be. We'll have a look.
Yeah, if
we do find it, it'll be in the description. But it was on DSTV for a little, and I like did get started on it.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I got started on it, and I couldn't finish it because it wasn't on the plane when I came back. I was like so excited to watch it on the plane when I came back, but it wasn't there.
Oh, yeah. That was my problem with Dream Scenario. I got halfway through. I remembered how much was left. And then on my second flight, which was still an Emirates flight.
Yes.
I was like, all right, let's finish it. And this one didn't fucking have it.
It's the worst, dude.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I thought the package would be the same.
Like fantastic, fantastic little story.
Yeah. Cool. Miles Teller is the producer.
Yeah.
Who puts, this is all about the making of The Godfather. So the books come out.
Yeah, Mario Puzo is causing all this controversy with the real mafia. We have a problem with how they're being depicted. And I think what it's setting up is showing how the mafia basically targeting the production and trying to stop it from getting made inspires the script writing of the production. So it's like there's a dead rat in Matthew Good's bed, which like inspires the horse head.
Yes.
And, you know,
yeah,
it was an incredible little... I was enjoying it so much.
Nice. And the guy who plays Francis Ford Coppola is very well cast.
Very well cast.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's called The Offer. It's definitely a movie geek show,
absolutely.
but it is a good story.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Magic, guys. Yeah. Is there anything else that we want to talk about?
Oh, I wanted to talk about season 3 of Vox Machina, which I'm a month late on. I didn't know it was out
right.
at the start of October on Amazon Prime.
Okay, what is that?
So I think we've spoken about it before, seasons 1
have.
And 2, where it's Critical Role are a Dungeons & Dragons YouTube channel made up of a whole bunch of voice actors that have basically been responsible for popularizing it.
Yeah.
I think in terms of how massive it is now, it's very largely because of YouTube channels like Critical Role.
What? The channel is called Critical Role and it's about Dungeons & Dragons.
So it's a bunch of voice actors playing Dungeons & Dragons.
Cool.
And there are like 4-hour-long episodes, and each campaign is like 200 episodes long.
Okay.
And you're watching these people play Dungeons & Dragons, and it gets millions of views.
Cool.
It's like incredible. And it got so big. Their first campaign got so massive
yeah.
that they adapted it into an animated TV show on Amazon Prime.
Okay, and that is called Vox Machina.
The Legend of Vox Machina.
Okay.
It's actually called The Legend of Vox Machina. I hate how that made me feel saying that. And I think we're underestimating the fact that we're kind of living in like a second wave or like a golden era of television high fantasy. It's like we've got Rings of Power, we've got Wheel of Time, we've got The Legend of Vox Machina. Arcane kind of plays in that space almost. It's more sci-fi.
Yes.
But it's still like we are getting such good fantasy, really fucking good fantasy. And also it's animation for adults.
Yes.
And it's a cool show like Clone Wars that we've spoken about before that kind of makes the case for animation not just being for children.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. It's like really fucking hilarious. It's very much for adults in terms of how violent it is, the sexual content.
Right.
And perhaps very much for people who play Dungeons & Dragons.
I'd say no. Like, you could not play Dungeons and Dragons and just watch a fantasy story.
Yeah. No, sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, its core base will be people who love
absolutely
Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah. And you're involved in a similar campaign that's lasted absolutely many, many years. What's your character's name?
Uwu.
Uwu.
Half-elf monk, Uwu Fiel.
And are you still playing? Are you still actively playing?
We played Dungeons an episode, yes. We played a session yesterday.
And what does that require for you? Well, via Zoom, hey?
Yeah, because our DM or Dungeon Master, Reinhardt, is in South Korea.
Okay.
So we have to like all link up a time that's convenient for all of us.
Right.
With him being 6 hours ahead. And that's on a Sunday at 10 o'clock for us, right. You know. So then we play through. And yesterday I had to fight my fanatical mother who's like started a cult to kill all magic users. And we finally confronted her yesterday after like 1.5 years. And I've been avoiding her. And it happened. And it was insane. It was so good.
I think it's safe to say that if you find a good set of characters and you've got a good dungeon master and you've got someone that can really pull the story, and if you've got a good context, yes, you can play the story forever.
Yes,
absolutely. Yeah, you get campaigns that last decades.
Yeah,
yeah. And so it's perhaps a little bit of a lightning in the bottle that you and your friends have found this particular campaign that worked.
Yes,
because I think maybe if it failed, you could have just done it again and tried a new thing.
I mean, like, but it's so dependent on people just showing up.
Right.
Like, Reinhardt is designing the story ahead of where we're playing.
Yes.
You know, and like trying to bring all our threads together for our different characters' backstories. And
it's interesting to hear about the work he has to do to keep his friends together.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so he actually has to be a creative narrative thinker to make your friend group game successful.
Exactly.
That's very interesting.
A lot of fun. Yeah. Highly recommended. So watch Critical Role on YouTube. They have 3 campaigns.
Nice.
I'd probably recommend starting with campaign 3 because it's the newest. It looks the best. Watch Vox Machina on Prime so you can see the results of the story that they're playing. It's very entertaining and very emotionally like satisfying.
Okay.
Yeah. I cried a bit in yesterday's episode of Vox Machina.
Have you ever played Dungeons & Dragons?
No.
GeForce? No. No, that skipped me entirely. But I have great respect for it. Magic.
Yeah.
Cool, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks for the time. It was so lovely to have you back, Cole.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be back.
Hey, oh, shit.
What?
You watched Book of Mormon.
I did watch the Book of Mormon.
Oh, cool.
You went and watched it
live. Yeah, like I had one more day in London before I flew back. And fucking, what was it? 6 hours before my flight, I went to go watch, which was like a gamble because Heathrow is like 1.5 hours away from London by train. On the express, it's like 20 minutes. And I was like, I did not plan that well. And getting to Heathrow was fucking stressful. Oh my God. Getting from the West End on a train on the Bakerloo line to Paddington Station.
Where were your bags?
They were stored at a shop in Paddington. Or like near Paddington Station, sorry. Oh, nice. So like a bureau de change, whatever you call those places. There's a network of shops that like chain up your bags. And you put like number tags on them and you store them there for the day for like £10.
Okay. Yeah, there's a bunch of lockers in Tokyo that do the same thing.
Yeah. So I found that.
Store your bags.
I went to London. I watched the Book of Mormon at a theater. I wish I knew what the theater was called. Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, it was Prince of Wales Theater, I think.
He got a lot of cultural venues named after him.
Right? Yeah, right.
But I just to share my Book of Mormon experience on a nice big holiday. I got given like, it was a combination of like birthday, Christmas, like everything together money to go and watch Book of Mormon in New York.
Right.
It was one of the more expensive tickets I think I'd ever paid. This is with me and the ex. And sitting down in that theater as it's about to start, and it also looks very similar to your picture.
Right.
So obviously the shows obviously look the same, but something about the theater looked very similar as well. I was sitting in that seat going, this is the most expensive thing I've ever bought in terms of performance.
Same.
I was like, this better be fucking good.
It better be fucking good.
This better be good.
For a mid-range seat, I like deliberately priced it because I was like, oh fuck, that's expensive.
Yeah.
I think like the most expensive tickets were like £250.
See.
Which is like fucking insane. And I got a ticket for like 2,000 rand. Which was like a mid-tier ticket.
Yeah. No, I remember converting.
It was so pricey.
I converted mine and it was somewhere between sort of 5,000 and 7,000 rand a ticket. I mean, it's insane. And so there's a part of me that's like, this has to be fucking good. And by the end of it, I was like, oh my God, it was so good.
It was so funny.
I was like, I'm so glad that that was good.
Yeah. Hello. It was incredible.
My name is Elder Price.
And I am here to talk to you about Jesus Christ. I
can't remember. It's so good. Yeah. It is so good.
I mean, like, they have Hitler in hell giving, like, giving head. Yeah. Or getting head from a Mormon priest that's secretly in the closets in a dream. It's just like South Park on steroids.
Yeah, so this is the, for those who don't know, this is the very famous play that was devised by the creators of South Park, along with a Tony Award-winning show writer. And they created this show called The Book of Mormon, and it's all about Mormons and Mormonism. And so it gives you a great introduction where you're like, this can't be the case. And you're like, oh, no, this is very much the history of Mormonism.
Yes.
And how much they believe and what they believe. We must actually have you next week talk about The Substance. And then you can also talk about Book of Mormon with Perrin, who was raised Mormon.
Yes. Oh, that'll be interesting.
It'll be very interesting because the Mormon church also had a very interesting relationship with this play.
Yes.
Where they at times thought, okay, let's not fight it, let's lean in. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of things that happened which were very interesting. Yeah. But it's all about the fact that they get assigned on mission, and our main character is so desperate to go to Orlando, Florida, which he believes is like, you know,
the greatest place,
the
on,
greatest
earth.
Place on earth. But instead he gets assigned like deepest, darkest Africa.
Yeah.
I forget which country it was.
Uganda.
I think it was Uganda.
It was Uganda.
Oh, so funny. It is so good. Okay. Speaking of funny missionary folk coming and knocking on your door, heretic? Heretic?
Heretic? Heretic, yeah.
How do we know how to pronounce it?
Heretic noun. Heretic might be, I don't think it is pronounced heretic. Or maybe that sounds like an adjective.
Heretic,
yes.
Heretic.
Because often nouns, verbs, and adjectives.
Heretical is a word.
Yes.
Heretic.
Heretic.
Yeah, they'll have
the
different
way,
pronunciations.
Yeah.
Heretic.
Heretic, yes.
Heretic is a movie coming out.
Heretic, first syllable.
There
heretic.
You go.
Heretic.
Heretic. Yeah. Is a movie coming out at the end of the month.
Yeah.
Here in South Africa. It is a A24 horror that stars good old Hugh Grant in what he is calling his, what did he call it? This is his kind of like fucking weird phase. He like gave it a name where like he's now just taking these like bizarre, crazy roles. He is the person.
It's his villain era.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit
it's
of
like
a villain.
Maybe, era. I don't know if it started with Paddington 2.
Could have. And then he was like, I like being the bad guy.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of pressure always being the sort of bumbly heartthrob.
Yeah.
To missionaries. I don't know whether they're Mormon. Do we know?
I don't,
but they are religious folk. Two women knock on his door.
Yeah. Mm.
He's the guy who answers and leads them in a horrific thriller, cat and mouse.
I think the setup is that he offers them in for pumpkin pie, and then they see that he's got a pumpkin pie scented candle, so he's not really baking pumpkin pie. And they try to get out, and then they're trapped.
Yeah.
And then there's a maze. Is there a labyrinth that they have to navigate to get out to test their faith?
I haven't seen it yet.
We don't know.
The trailer was like, it's a good tease.
Yeah.
But yeah, as we said, we've got the screening coming up, and we want you to join us on that.
Oh, cool.
So yeah. Basically, sorry, G-Force. We're going to record the fact that it's coming in the beginning. We forgot to mention it. So this is us refreshing each other's memory on it. And so, yeah, so it'll be cool that we're going to get to the screening. We're going to have you guys join us, and we're going to all watch this movie together, because as you can tell, we don't know anything about it.
Yes.
But it looks really good, and it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Mm.
But yeah, that was a good segue from Book of Mormon to a Hugh Grant horror. Magic, guys.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you for today.
Mm.
Thank you for working hard.
Yeah,
doing fuck all,
such hard
just
work.
Just talking shit.
Waiting.
Hopefully some customers come in later, and this video store makes some money. Because right now it's not paying its way. Cool. Our home base is the video store.
Yes.
And so yeah, chime in and let us know about Gladiator 2.
Yeah.
And what you think of all the stuff that we've spoken about today.
Please.
All right. Chills.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Bye.